This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, May 15th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Eureka Springs is one of the top arts destinations in Arkansas. This historic village of 2,100 residents, over 200 artists, and more than 35 galleries welcomes the May Festival of the Arts. This month-long festival offers art exhibits, events, and more. Eureka Springs, where American art is made.
Support for KUAF comes from Today's Bank, announcing its new branch in Fiesta Square at 2971 North College, and their branch at 300 North College in Fayetteville, also serving Huntsville with two locations. Today's Bank, full-service banking, helping today's dreams become tomorrow's realities. Member FDIC.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, in an effort to facilitate further business success in Arkansas, the Economic Development Commission has launched a new website, ArkansasFavorsTheBold.com. We'll have a conversation with Grant Tenniel, that organization's executive director.
Plus, the 4th District, now the largest geographically in the state, is in the midst of a heated Republican race this primary season. We have part one in a series speaking with each candidate.
Those stories and more, but first, while not ruling on the constitutionality of Arkansas's voter ID law, the state Supreme Court yesterday tossed out a judge's ruling that struck down the law. Pulaski County Circuit Judge Tim Fox's decision had to do with a challenge from the County Election Commission regarding absentee ballots submitted without proof of identification. The Arkansas legislature didn't specify language about absentee ballots, so the State Board of Election Commissioners passed a rule saying voters could have until the following Monday after an election to provide proof of identification. Chris Burks, Pulaski County Election Commissioner, says he didn't feel the rule was appropriate because it wasn't specified in the law. The Supreme Court ruled that Judge Fox didn't have the authority to determine the law's constitutionality. Burks says he's still pleased.
You know, I think the Supreme Court's ruling is a great ruling. It provides a lot of clarity. It says that the State Board of Elections can't make up a rule to fix what was not in a law that the legislature passed. So I think it's a great ruling.
Meanwhile, in a second lawsuit over the broader implications of the law, Judge Fox has ruled it unconstitutional, but stayed enforcement of order until an appeal can be heard.
With Congress expected to eventually vote on proposed cuts to the Fulbright Scholar Program, there are growing calls against this action. Longtime Arkansas Senator J. William Fulbright worked with President Harry Truman to create the program, which has enabled hundreds of thousands of students and teachers to conduct research abroad and bring foreign scholars to the U.S. Lee Powell is director of the Delta Grassroots Caucus, who knew Fulbright for two decades and wrote an extensive biography on Fulbright.
President Obama would like to make a major increase in some other programs, the Young African Leaders Initiative and the Southeast Asian Leaders Initiative, and we want to make clear we support those programs, and what we say is the reasonable thing to do is keep the funding level for all three of them, but don't make a huge cut in a famous program that's tried and true so that you can shift some money over to another project.
Powell says there are several parties who are against the cuts to the program.
Senators Pryor and Bozeman, we know, do not agree with it. The Fulbright Scholars Alumni Association, representing over 300,000 Fulbright Scholars across the globe, of course, opposes this, as does the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. So we hope that the funding will not be cut for this program. It's done a lot of good international goodwill and has promoted international education across the globe.
Powell says the Fulbright program has an annual budget of $234 million and has allowed research by 29 former heads of state and 45 Nobel Prize winners.
The U.S. Forest Service is undertaking a massive forest restoration project on roughly 7,000 acres of the Ozark-St. Francis National Forest. The Locust Gap Project, proposed by the Pleasant Hill Ranger District, is located just south of the Red Star community near the Mulberry River. C.J. Norville is the public affairs specialist for the Ozark National Forest. She says the project being proposed would be focused on addressing health deterioration of the forest.
We've looked at this project just as part of our normal assessment of areas of the forest we go through each year. And what we found is a lot of forest health issues like ice storm damage, where bugs have infested, that sort of thing. So we really have proposed some actions that would return the forest to a healthier state.
She says a variety of actions have been proposed to promote forest health in the area, including removing some damaged trees and thinning other stands of trees to help promote diversity, eradication of the invasive tree of heaven plant species, and prescribed burning. Norville says the Forest Service is seeking comment from the public, specifically from people who are familiar with the Locust Gap area or the Ozark National Forest in general.
In the past, we've heard from people about prescribed burning and some of their concerns about smoke management, which we try very hard to manage, but sometimes it can be a little bit difficult. Many people often have comments about timber harvesting or the use of herbicide, particularly in a really special area like the Locust Gap Project area is in. The Locust Gap Project area is in the headwaters of the Mulberry River. So we know that this work has to be done. We know it has to be done right.
Public comments on the Locust Gap Project may be submitted until June 6th.
Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel announced yesterday that a Canadian tobacco company has been ordered to pay nearly $30 million to the state. According to Talk Business Arkansas, Pulaski County Circuit Judge Wendell Griffin ruled that Grand River Enterprises will pay $29.5 million to the state for failing to put money in escrow for sales of Seneca cigarettes in lieu of participating in the 1998 Master Settlement Agreement with big tobacco companies. In addition to the reparations to the state, the company has been ordered to place $9.8 million in escrow, where it will remain for 25 years. The state would receive the money if it were to obtain a judgment against the company for health-related claims associated with smoking of the company's cigarettes. Otherwise, the funds in escrow would revert to the company after 25 years.
Mostly clear tonight. Lows will be in the mid-30s in northwest Arkansas. Lower to mid-40s for the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow. More clouds, slight chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow, mid-60s northwest Arkansas. Lower 70s for the Arkansas River Valley. And for Friday night, mostly cloudy. 60% chance of thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas. 40% chance tomorrow night of rain in the Arkansas River Valley. Lows tomorrow night throughout the region from 43 to 49. This is Ozarks at Large. Primary elections will be held May 20th. Early voting is already taking place. This week, Jacob Kaufman from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock is talking to the two candidates that are seeking the Republican nomination for Arkansas's 4th Congressional District. That district has grown geographically in recent years. After redistricting following the 2010 census, the 4th District now stretches further north than ever before, taking in Clarksville, Paris, Huntsville, and surrounding territory. Democrat James Lee Witt is running unopposed in that primary, and Libertarian Ken Hamilton already has his party's nomination. We'll begin with a discussion with Republican Tommy Maul of Hot Springs. He's a former researcher for a Washington, D.C.-based think tank, and he worked with global investment bank Jefferies. Maul faces Bruce Westerman. Here is Tommy Maul talking to Jacob Kaufman. Their discussion began with economic development.
A couple key types of industries in the 4th District to keep in mind. First, I would point you to poultry, which is really important in darn near all of the 33 of 33 counties in the 4th District. Unfortunately, the policies coming out of Washington right now are making their jobs harder, not easier, because the federal government's policy is driving up the cost of the feed that folks who are raising chickens have to buy. And so it's threatening their business. It's making their jobs harder, not easier. So we need to get rid of that policy and let the free market thrive. Great example of that is in the poultry business in the 4th District.
And do you think the poultry business, obviously each corporation who engages in that is different, but it seems like a lot of them, particularly in Arkansas, are remarkably successful worldwide. Do they owe the growers any of the share of that increasing cost of feed?
Well, the way it's set up is, the growers have to buy their own feed. And if the market is, if there is a free market that price is going to be a fair price. Unfortunately, we don't have a free market right now because the government, the federal government's policy drives up the cost of corn, which drives up the cost of feed that the growers are having to buy. And so the direction I would want to head is to just get the federal government out of this business to begin with, and we'll all be better off for it. I say all intentionally. It won't only be folks who have to buy the feed. It's going to be everyone who goes to the grocery store and buys chicken.
Immigration legislation has largely stalled in Congress. What is your plan for addressing continued immigration as well as those currently here attending school or working?
I tell you, on the number one issue for me regarding immigration is we need to be able to control our own border. Our federal government is involved in so many things it shouldn't be involved in, but one of its core duties is being able to control our own national border. So, number one, that's my priority. Number two, and I can tell you this from experience campaigning around the 4th District, there are lots of different industries in the 4th District and in Arkansas that rely on folks coming from various parts of the world to come work here. That needs to be It needs to be possible to do that on a legal basis. And we should absolutely focus on making sure that our legal immigration policy is streamlined and transparent. At the end of the day, we're a nation of immigrants. Everyone who's here has a family that came from somewhere else. But we need to make sure that our legal immigration policy is the way folks are going.
All right, and now I'd want to hit on the Affordable Care Act a little bit. It's one of the central pillars of your economic policies going forward. In order to spur job growth, it must be repealed. With that in mind, do you have any type of replacement in mind? And specifically in Arkansas, we've talked a lot about the private option. So with your replacement, would you be considering that private option population that's 100 to 140% of the poverty line?
There's no version of Obamacare that I support. I do not support the private option. I want to go to Washington and help repeal Obamacare at the federal level. I want to replace it with a healthcare policy that's based on people and their doctors making the best decisions that they can, not on politicians and bureaucrats getting involved in those, making those decisions about, for example, what kind of medicine to take or what kind of surgery you can have. I want a healthcare policy where people and their doctors get to make those decisions. And the way we get there is not by creating new rules, by giving bureaucrats more control over the healthcare system. I want, to the greatest extent possible, to let people and families manage their own decisions. That will lead us in the direction of a much better healthcare policy. The quality of care we receive will improve, and the price of it will go down.
Aside from quality and price arguments, what about the population that wouldn't have insurance without the Affordable Care Act? For instance, I think in Arkansas, if you include those through the marketplace and through the private option, it's a little over 200,000 people. Is there a remedy for them in your replacement?
I want to live in a world, and I want to fight for a country where everyone who works hard and plays by the rules can find a good job, and that they can provide their own health care and provide health care for their families. That's the direction I want to head. It requires having an economy that's let free to grow, unlike what we have now, where President Obama is making it harder on the economy to grow. That's the direction I want to help our country head.
Would you argue then that places like Walmart and Tyson Chicken don't provide good jobs? They don't provide insurance?
Jacob, I'm not sure I'm following your question. I guess the direction I'm coming from is...
Well, you want good jobs in the district that are capable of allowing people to get health insurance. Are you saying that current jobs that don't provide health insurance aren't good jobs necessarily?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I want people, if they work hard and play by the rules, to be able to find a good job. And I want people to be let alone and empowered to make their own healthcare decisions and buy the kind of health insurance that's right for them and for their family.
That was Tommy Maul of Hot Springs. He's one of two candidates seeking the Republican nomination in the primary election for Arkansas's 4th Congressional District. You can tune in tomorrow on Ozarks at Large to hear a conversation with his opponent in the GOP primary, Bruce Westerman.
In just about 20 minutes on Ozarks at Large, inexpensive and earth-friendly methods to keep varmints away from summer gardens.
For the deer, I'm going to string some twine between them and then just kind of hang some down. So You know, they may get brave and come in, but usually a visual deterrence and maybe some hanging pie plates and things might help keep them away some. And then I'm going to do chicken wire all along the bottom to keep the rabbits out.
And wooden pallets. We'll have more ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. In a check-in with Michael Pollan, we'll find out, where are we in the battle for healthier food?
There's a sugar arms race in the supermarket where, you know, the yogurt now has to compete with the soda for which can deliver more sugar per ounce. And the yogurt's ahead right now.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
It begins next, just after Ozarks at Large at 1 o'clock, here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
During the past 70 years, Arkansas has borne several enterprising business and political leaders who've gone on to make national and international waves with their successes. The Arkansas Economic Development Commission wants to continue that momentum for years to come. To that end, the commission has launched a new website. Grant Tenniel, the executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio this week to talk with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis about the site, ArkansasFavorsTheBold.com. Tenniel began the conversation by saying the site and associated marketing efforts is an attempt to tell the world about the rich entrepreneurial history of Arkansas and that the state is a place where dreamers can meet great success.
You look at our history. Obviously, here in Northwest Arkansas, it immediately calls to mind people like Sam Walton and J.B. and John L. Hunt and Don Tyson. But at the same time, you think about people like President Clinton when you think about bold Arkansans. And, you know, as people around the country and around the world are looking for places to come and invest money and start businesses, we believe that Arkansas provides the kind of environment and the kind of people that will allow, you know, small business owners to dream big and to get the benefit of whatever it is that's in the water here in Arkansas that tends to take people with big ideas and turn them into international conglomerate and business superstars.
On the website, Arkansas Favors the Bold, it mentions that there's a can-do attitude in Arkansas. And this is something that some venture capitalists here in this area have mentioned to me before. Where does that idea come from?
Well, I wish we knew, because if you and I knew exactly where that comes from, we would stop taping this program and just run out and make $1 billion. I don't know what it is. I think that, you know, particularly in Northwest Arkansas, among the generation that we just described, of those, you know, entrepreneurs in the 60s and in the 70s that wound up running the world's largest retailer, the world's largest protein producer, and one of the world's largest logistics companies, it was kind of a combination of, as the governor says, you know, you can't grow rocks up here. The rest of the state had been, you know, so dependent upon row crop agriculture. And up here, for all kinds of geological reasons, that wasn't an option. And so there were people here who were trying to figure out a way to make a living. And they had to be a little more ingenious about it than their peers in other parts of the state. Although we've got incredible entrepreneurs from other parts of the state as well, Arkansas has always struggled with an identity crisis. We're a poor, small southern state, when in actuality, there is tremendous wealth here. There is tremendous opportunity here. And the example over and over and over again of people who took what might have been a disadvantage at the time and turned it on its head and figured out how to make it work and have had outsized success to what anybody would have imagined or envisioned.
Some of the current icons of Arkansas's bold status, you've already mentioned Tyson, Walmart, J.B. Hunt. Who are some or what are some of the entrepreneurs or types of entrepreneurs and businesses you're aiming to target with this campaign?
Sure. Well, I think that you talk about a gentleman who's sort of in the middle between the three that you named, and then in that same group I would put the Jack and Whit Stevens and, you know, the Forest Woods of the world. A person who came along just after those guys was somebody like a Charles Morgan, who, you know, was a true pioneer in one of the fastest growing industries now in the world, and we're really only beginning to get a glimpse of what Charles Morgan was up to when he started Axiom, because every business in the world now is so data dependent. But he really spotted that trend early and, you know, focused on the marketing side. Now, he has since been sort of bought out of Axiom. It has another CEO, but Mr. Morgan has spent the last few years, and we work very closely with him, identifying companies in that same kind of space that are starting small but have the potential to grow by leaps and bounds very quickly. And so, you know, when we talk about bold vision, bold opportunity, certainly the IT space and the data analysis space is one that we feel like we've got a good grounding in and provides a real opportunity here. The hardcore data engineer is a tough person to find right now. They're a tough person to find in San Jose or Palo Alto. They're a tough person to find in Austin. They're a tough person to find in Boston and Cambridge. They're commanding big bucks, and there aren't enough of them. Part of the message that we're sending to companies in that business right now is that we are nimble enough and small enough that you can come here and be a big deal. I mean, you know, you can come here with a company that needs 50 people, and you're pretty quickly on the radar screen at AEDC, on the radar screen in the governor's office, and on the radar screen at the U of A and UALR and ASU. And so if what you need are engineers, we can put you in a position that you wouldn't get in some of those other places to sit down with the dean of that school and say, here's exactly what I need you to teach these folks. And if you can create 20 people in the next 2 years with these skills, I'll hire every single one of them. And we're seeing some of that now. We have located in the last year a few different companies, one that we took from New York City. I mean, the people who work at this company worked in Manhattan, and the company made a decision, all of the people involved collectively, to move it lock, stock, and barrel to Conway, Arkansas. We've got another company that this time last year was located in Scottsdale, Arizona, and they also made a decision to move it lock, stock, and barrel to Little Rock. We are having further conversations with companies that both of those companies are familiar with, have good working relationships with, about making the same kind of move. The great thing about Arkansas from that perspective is that the quality of life is hands down better than most places on planet Earth. Livability, affordability, we win. We win every time. Mm-hmm. You know, the stories, particularly up here, are legendary about folks that work for Walmart vendors who were sent here by their company. They had to be dragged kicking and screaming to go to Arkansas. They moved here, they fell in love with it, and they quit their job with that company in order to remain here instead of take the promotion and be moved. Arkansas, it's a tough place to shake. I myself am not a native, but it's home, and it's been home for a long time, and it's I will very likely be buried here.
Right.
And it is utterly unique in that way.
So on the site, the business climate of Arkansas is described as friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Explain what that means, a friendly business climate.
Well, I think generally, and again, we can get into all kinds of discussions with folks who will split hairs on this and talk about the relative high rate of corporate income tax that still exists on the books in Arkansas. But, you know, the reality is there are very few companies that are structured in such a way that they're actually paying the full boat of 7% on their corporate income. But, you know, when you look at total tax treatment, Arkansas is a low tax state for business. Our utility costs, so the cost of electricity and the cost of gas here, is low compared to the rest of the country. We have an environmental regulatory regime here that, you know, does its job to protect the environment of the state of Arkansas, but it is, you know, 99 times out of 100 leaning toward working with business. Governor Beebe has always said that he feels like there is always a way to get to the place where the interest of business and the interest of the environment can both be protected. And when it can't, we're going to fall down on the side of the environment. We've seen very few situations where it's come to that. So in terms of starting a business and getting it off the ground, Arkansas provides a great environment. And in fact, we've been recognized nationally by CNBC and other organizations as, you know, one of the easiest places to start a business in the country.
One final area that the website touches on is the cultural side.
Sure.
How important is that business and leisure balance to attracting businesses to the natural state?
I think it's one of the keys to what gives Arkansas an advantage. I mean, it's that combination of livability. And by livability, I mean you guys have some fairly famous traffic difficulties up here in Northwest Arkansas. But as painful as it is for people who have to drive the corridor between Fayetteville and Bentonville every day, a bad day here is Tuesday in Los Angeles. In Little Rock, we tend to get annoyed if it takes more than about 12 minutes to get from one place to another place at any time of the day. So that kind of livability is an advantage. But the other thing is the entire state has this crazy knack for sort of, you know, what I like to call surprise and delight. We have visitors from all over the country and all over the world who come here for various reasons. But the folks who come to our office in Little Rock directly from the airport for the first time, inevitably, the very first thing they say is, "Wow, this is beautiful. I had no idea." Well, then after a couple of days, it's, "Wow, this is beautiful. I had no idea." And you've got world-class art museums in Northwest Arkansas and in Central Arkansas. You have a ballet, a symphony, a theater, a presidential library, all in the same place that you have natural beauty in as many acres of outdoor recreational opportunity as you can find anywhere. You have a system of hiking and biking trails that is quickly becoming world-renowned. Your restaurants are much more diverse and good than we deserve for a population our size. I think that most people tend to think that Arkansas is what the conventional wisdom of the 50s and 60s would have you believe that it is. And when they come, they realize that it is much more cosmopolitan, that there are all kinds of fantastic cultural and recreational opportunities here. And you get all that in a package that doesn't have a lot of the downside of the larger cities in America, where it's still fairly easy. And it's got a homey feel that very few other places have. My wife and I were in Washington, D.C. a couple of weekends ago, and we were waiting to board the airplane to come back to Little Rock. And the most interesting thing about it was the first time in our memory, and we commented on the fact that we got onto a plane headed back to Little Rock from somewhere else, and we didn't know anybody on the airplane. And, you know, it just felt weird that somehow there were 150-some-odd people, and we were the only ones we knew.
So to sum up, would you say that one of the goals of Arkansas Favors the Bold is to change the idea of Arkansas as a flyover state to a destination, not only for leisure but for business?
Absolutely. I think you've hit it right on the head. And it is designed to serve as a marketing site for the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. We have a website that is arkansasedc.com, which looks like the website of a government agency, which is what we are. But we felt strongly that we needed something that told the story of who we are to audiences around the world who may not have a clue where Arkansas is or what it is or what it stands for. And we capitalize on the fact, you know, the governor and I went to China a couple of years ago, and I'll be going back this fall. When we got to China, we said we were from Arkansas, and every single person we met with knew two things: Walmart and Bill Clinton. And I think when you take a look at ArkansasFavorsTheBold.com, you will see that we use those two pieces of our history to great advantage.
All right, Grant, thank you for coming in today.
Happy to do it.
That was Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis speaking with Grant Tenniel, Executive Director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. That organization has recently launched the website, ArkansasFavorsTheBold.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Walton Arts Center's Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, presents the Artisphere Celebration this Friday evening beginning at 5:30 at Walton Arts Center. This opening event will celebrate events of Artisphere. Live music and artists will be available. More information at artisphearfestival.org. Time now for a giveaway.
Yes, it is. Let's first tell you what we have to give away. It's quite a nice little package here. Four vouchers to see a Northwest Arkansas Naturals game this season.
Any game.
Any game, as long as it's not a sellout. But you take these up and you exchange them for the best tickets available at night. Four passes to any Malco movie theater in the area.
Any movie.
Well.
Within reason.
Yes. I mean, it won't be a brand new release.
Right.
But then also a brand new CD from the band The Black Moods, two of them are originally from Wheaton, Missouri. They were in Fayetteville at the Stolen Glass earlier this week. I talked to them, that conversation, on a later edition of Ozarks, but they gave me their new CD. And then, not available anywhere but right here, the Mozart in the Museum CD from last year when KUAF had the live broadcast of the Artisphere Orchestra from Crystal Bridges Museum of Art. It's been replayed on Performance Today several times. Well, here is the only CD not commercially available, but we will include this in the package. And we have two of these packages.
I was going to say, not just one, but two packages are available to two listeners.
Right. And you have two ways to enter. One, just say, I want it.
Okay.
I want the tickets. I want the CDs. But if you want to have twice the chance, you can answer our trivia question.
And that question is?
Well, in a few minutes, we're going to hear about Peabody Hall at the University of Arkansas, which was named after a Mr. Peabody. Well, there was another Mr. Peabody, if you grew up some years ago watching cartoons, Mr. Peabody and Sherman. I just want you to tell me what species of dog Mr. Peabody was.
All right. And if you know, you can send your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Anyone can enter. If you don't know the answer, you'll still get in. If you know the answer, you're entered for both packages. Ozarks at large@gmail.com.
This week in This American Life, what it's like for writer David Sedaris, living in France, struggling with the language.
This is my worst nightmare right here. Okay, my lighter has run out of fluid, which would mean that I would have to ask somebody for a match. And so what I would say is, hello, do you have some fire?
Americans in Paris, why the French may be right to hate us.
I will not spend the afternoon asking people if they have fire.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to KUAF.
Planting and cultivating home vegetable gardens takes hard work and certain investment in seeds, starts, and soil amendments. And protecting that investment from varmints can also cost money, unless you build a pallet garden. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Rob Button weeds a raised bed in his large garden plot behind his home on Mount Sequoia, which he shares with his spouse, Christy. Two sons, Connor and Riley, and two hounds, Paws and Panic Button.
This is a bed that just kind of laid fallow over the winter. I probably should have covered it. I didn't. But good thing is, I have some volunteer strawberries from last year that are still here, so that's one less thing I have to plant.
Plot's overgrown with fescue and chickweed, but Rob has a good excuse for his late start this spring.
I'm a psych nurse. I work nights. You know, our weather this spring has been a little goofy. It's been really cold. And usually when it's daytime, I'm sleeping. So the opportunities that I have to work out here are few and far between, and I've been focusing on getting the fence ready.
Rob's also growing the footprint of his garden this season with a new fenced boundary made up of scavenged pallets.
Most of them are about 3.5 by 3.5. Some of them are larger, some of them are smaller.
Now you have to be mindful when using the pallets because some of the wood is treated.
There are really actually two main types of pallets, and that's how the wood is treated. One of them is heat treated, and you can use those next to food. And then the others are chemically treated, and you definitely don't want to use those next to food.
Every pallet should have a stamp along the edge indicating if the wood contains chemicals. HT stands for heat treated, which is safe to use adjacent to food plots. Rob Button chose to start the fence line off three large wood-framed compost bins.
And so those are pretty good structures. Those are kind of nailed or screwed together. So I kind of went out from there, kind of just nailing them together. And then about every third pallet or so, I've got some sort of stake or rebar or random something pounded into the ground, essentially to help to hold them up.
Some of the stakes are 20-foot-tall bamboo poles, also scrounged from local groves. He uses found wooden crates to build the corners. But can't hungry deer jump over a 4-foot-tall pallet?
For the deer, I'm going to string some twine between them and then just kind of hang some down. So, they may get brave and come in, but usually a visual deterrence and maybe some hanging pie plates and things might help keep them away some. And then I'm going to do chicken wire all along the bottom to keep the rabbits out.
So where does he score all the free pallets?
There's lots and lots of pallets around. A lot of like furniture stores and other places will have them just hanging out back. And you know, find if you go and ask there, many of them are like, oh yeah, please take them off our hands.
Pallets are made from leftover lumber scraps, and nearly 2 billion are circulating in the U.S. at any given time. Transporting all sorts of merchandise. Of course, supply chain retailers increasingly utilize professional management solutions to reclaim or reuse broken pallets. Then there are people like Rob Button helping to keep pallets out of landfills. Now, were he to install a chain link fence instead, it would cost him $200 per 50 feet. These pallets are free. He also purchases compost and mulch from the city by the truckload, which is super cheap. And he shows off one more experiment, two long lasagna beds.
You take shredded leaves, of which we have plenty. We have 7.5 acres, lots of trees. Shredded leaves and peat moss and compost or manure. So these beds have been cooking, essentially, with the plastic over them since November. So they should be ready to plant in, you know, as soon as I have the opportunity to make it happen. So I've got three of these, and Riley's going to do, I think, one of these. Hello, little earthworm. Here we go.
I think I'm going to do that one.
Well, that's fine.
That's Rob's 10-year-old son, Riley, who's tending his own garden plot. Rob Button says the pallet fence project has been a family affair.
It's been a fun little project, and I've enjoyed getting outside and teaching the kids how to use a hammer and a drill and being creative and just kind of going with it. It's fun.
Pallet garden fences is just one way to reuse discarded pallets. The material can also be transformed into benches, which can be sanded and varnished, shelves, tables, even flooring. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
It is Thursday, May 15th, 2014. Happy George Brett's birthday. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Somewhere I have a signed baseball card from George Brett from his very first season with the Kansas City Royals.
Somewhere.
I don't know where this is. I think my mom has it. We saw him
at... It's like the Louvre saying, somewhere, we have the Mona Lisa.
I know.
I don't know where it is.
I'll find it. If I find it, I'll give it to you. You should see his face.
All right.
I'm glad you said something, because I did not know who George Brett was.
Oh, yeah.
It's his 61st birthday, by the way.
All right.
Okay. right? Okay.
Now I'm too tired to do this segment. Okay. If I find it, I'll give it to you.
Well, okay.
He looks very happy. Yeah. All right. We are wrapping up our 4 days of things for kids to do this summer, and today we are in Fayetteville.
Okay.
With Arts Live Theater that has a whole raft of stuff, of course. A summer fun musical theater camp starting in June for ages 5 to 7. A theater art camp also in June for ages 5 to 7. Pirates and Fun Creative Play Camp. Same time, same channel. Reader's Theater Camp for ages 8 to 11 in June. A Broadway musical theater camp in June for ages 8 to 11. A Make-Believe Mountain Creative Play Camp in July for ages 5 to 7. Pirates and Princesses Creative Play Camp. I want to do all of these. July for ages 8 to 11. Summer Theater Conservatory in July for ages 12 to 18. Theater Art Camp again in July. And Curtain Up Musical Theater Camp in July for ages 8 to 11. Oh, we're not done. We've got Drama Dinosaurs, Lazy Day Musical Theater Camp, Castles and Kingdoms, Magical Musical Theater Camp, a Monologue Workshop, Get Up and Dance Camp, Seas of Fun Musical Theater Camp, Spotlight Musical Theater Camp, and Heroes and Villains Create a Play Camp.
Good grief.
And you can find out about all of those at 521-4932. At the Community Creative Center in Nadine Baum Studios, it's an 8-week summer camp called Time for Art.
8 weeks.
And they're traveling all over from ancient Egypt to modern times and making art.
Wow.
Starts June 9th for ages 6 to 14, and you can find out more at 571-2706. And Theater Squared has a summer drama academy where they will be focusing on Hamlet. Oddly enough, since they just finished Hamlet, that's in July, and it's for ages 10 to 18. And you can register for that at 443-5600.
That's a lot.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, we'll hear some great music like that in the background. That's a group called Time Warp playing the music of Duke Ellington. We'll also hear vocalist Jimmy Scott, pianist Aaron Parks, and more music that you'll be able to hear at the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series, including the Yellow Jackets and the Sons of Brazil. All this and more Friday at 10 p.m. right here on KUAF.
Late last month, the University of Arkansas celebrated Peabody Hall's 100th birthday. The now century-old building reopened in 2011 after undergoing a restoration process. The recent celebration inspired Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda to learn more about the building's namesake for our What's in a Name series, and she has this report.
It seems fitting that Peabody Hall is the home of the College of Education and Health Professions at the University of Arkansas. Years ago, university students got hands-on experience teaching children in Peabody Elementary School and University High School, which were once housed in Peabody Hall. The stately red brick building sits just north of the old main lawn on the northeast corner of the university's main campus. Last month, current and former students, as well as university officials, gathered on Peabody's South Lawn to celebrate the building's centennial. Fayetteville's mayor was among those in attendance.
Now, therefore, I, Lionel Jordan, mayor of the city of Fayetteville, Arkansas, do hereby proclaim Friday, April 25th, 2014, as Peabody Hall 100th Anniversary Day in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and I call upon all citizens to celebrate this significant anniversary with the University of Arkansas community. Thank you.
Over the last decade, new buildings have been added to the university campus and older ones have been updated. Chancellor David Gerhart says Peabody Hall is one of only five buildings on campus that were built prior to 1925.
As such, it is an integral part of our campus identity. It's an integral part of our character and our heritage. Built in 1913 with $40,000 in private funds, from the Peabody Education Foundation, Peabody Hall has the distinction of being the first building on campus created with private funds. Now, I will tell you, it cost us a little more than $40,000 to renovate it a couple of years ago. But for more than 50 years, it was the site of the Peabody Elementary School and, as you know, the University High School. Perhaps its most famous graduate was University of Arkansas President and United States Senator J. William Fulbright, who attended kindergarten through high school here. He used to tell people it took him 17 years to get out of the University of Arkansas. Now that this building has been restored to its original red brick, it looks much more like the home that he knew growing up.
Peabody Hall is named for the man whose money financed its construction, George Peabody, the father of modern philanthropy. The City of Peabody, Massachusetts, the Peabody Institute Library, the Peabody Historical Society, and the George Peabody House have worked together to create a website with online exhibits of the city's past. According to the website, which can be found at peabodymassarchives.com, George Peabody was born February 18, 1795, in South Danvers, Massachusetts, which today is called Peabody, Massachusetts. He was born poor and received little formal education, but by the age of 19, he went into the import and export business. In 1837, he traveled to London to expand his work and eventually became an investment banker. Tim Nutt is the head of special collections at University of Arkansas Libraries. He was asked to do some research on George Peabody in preparation for last month's celebration. The U of A benefited from the philanthropist's decision to create the Peabody Education Fund.
He wanted to encourage the intellectual, moral, and industrial education of the destitute children of the southern states. So after the Civil War, you know, he saw this need in the southern United States to improve the lives of the children, and he did that through education. And so he set up this fund to create schools, and I just find that that's just amazing. That he would have that forethought and that sense of obligation to help his fellow man.
Nutt says although Peabody had not been born into a rich family, he managed to pull himself up by his own bootstraps and create a nice life for himself. Nutt says he thinks Peabody's background helped influence his philanthropic decisions as an adult.
It wasn't just the southern states. I mean, he contributed so many things across the country and London, as I mentioned. He gave to Harvard University, he gave to Yale University, he gave to his hometown in Massachusetts. And it all has to do with education. So obviously he saw the need for education and how education could lift you out of out of being poor or destitute and get you a better life.
George Peabody donated more than $8 million to his hometown, as well as several colleges, libraries, and museums. He was the first American to be named an honorary citizen of London, the city where he died in 1869 at the age of 74. He is buried in Salem, Massachusetts, and his birthplace of 205 Washington Street in Peabody, Massachusetts, is now the George Peabody House Museum. Tim Nutt, head of special collections, says it's important to mark anniversaries like the 100th anniversary of Peabody Hall for a number of reasons.
Having that event the other day, celebrating the centennial of Peabody School, and the people there who had been former students and everyone who had memories of Peabody School. I think it's very it's nice just to let people, one, remember. That sounds so cliche, but remember the good times that they had at Peabody School, or whatever it may be. And two, just to educate as well, because people don't know who Peabody School was named after. And there were people, I'm sure there were people at that event the other day who was pleased to learn about the history of Peabody School and who George Peabody was, and to learn more about the history of the campus and the history of Fayetteville. And I think those are one of the things when you have events like that, educating folks about the history of their community or their state is very important.
For more on the College of Education and Health Professions, which is housed in Peabody Hall, visit coehp.uark.edu. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
KUAF will broadcast Mozart in the Museum live from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, May 28th at 8 p.m. Hosted by KUAF's Kyle Kellums and Katie Henriksen. This live broadcast will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, interviews, and more. This event is made possible in part by contributing listeners of KUAF Public Radio.
The 5th annual Singing for Spay's picnic to benefit Spay, Arkansas will be Saturday from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. at Dog Party USA. Tickets available at the door. Barbecue with all of the fixings, refreshments, and live music will be offered. More information available at spayarkansas.org or on Facebook at Spay Arkansas.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Red Star.
Red Star. You mentioned just a moment ago that later this month we'll have Mozart in the Museum broadcast live on KUAF from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art with with the Artisphere Orchestra. A reminder that last year's performance is on a CD, but you don't buy this at stores. You can't find this anywhere except if you win our giveaway.
That's right. We have two packages, actually. That CD, a CD from the
Black Moods, a band that was in town recently, four tickets to any Malco movie theater, and four tickets to the upcoming Northwest Arkansas Naturals game at Arvest Ballpark of your choice. All of that. You can enter just by saying you want them, or if you want to double your chances, tell me what breed of dog Mr. Peabody was on the cartoon Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
There you go, and you can do that at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
That's correct.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You and I will be back together again tomorrow.
Yes, for Friday.
That's right.
We'll be talking to one of the dancers from the Trey McIntyre Project as well on our program.
Well, we will end today's show with a song from Basement Brew. I believe we mentioned on yesterday's show that that group will perform Saturday evening at the Fayetteville Underground as part of a fundraiser for Artist Laboratory Theater. So this is Basement Brew's song, Down and Out. Thank you so much for listening.
I never asked for much of anything. I'm down and out in my slum barrio. It's where I've gone to pass the time away. Forget about the things I'm sorry for. It doesn't matter if you say my name. When you tell somebody about a man you know, it doesn't matter if you cause me pain. I'll kill it.